Hello everyone, this is Ethan Day. I'd like to thank you so much for stopping by my guest post at Joyfully J. Much love and appreciation to JJ for hosting part two in a series of interviews between myself and audiobook performer Jason Fraser following the release of the Northern Star audiobook, which is now available on Audible, Amazon, and iTunes.
Hey everybody, this is Jason Fraser, narrator of Northern Star by Ethan Day, and I'm happy to answer a couple questions about the process of recording this book, questions about my background, how I got started, things like that. So, and plus, I love working with Ethan. Every chance I get to work with Ethan is a blessing because there's very few people that write like him, and so I'm just, it's always, it's like a match made in heaven anytime I get to work with Ethan. So I'm very happy to take some time to answer these questions. And I hope you guys find the answers interesting and hope this is fun for you. Anyway, on with the questions.
Oh, thank you so much, kind sir. I certainly appreciate that, and right back at you. I truly love working with you as well, Jason. Aside from the variety of voices you manage to pull from Lord knows where, which elevate your work to performance level, in my humble opinion, the thing that initially drew me to you is that tone of amusement in your voice. It feels like it's there naturally, non-forced, though perhaps it's something you worked on and cultivated for all I know. But I find that so appealing as both a listener and as an author of romantic comedy. The first time I heard you listening to Ciara York's Pray the Gay Away, I could hear the protagonist, Julian, from my book As You Are, so distinctly. I knew almost instantly that I'd found the right voice for that book. And you delivered way beyond any of my expectations, so working with you again was certainly a no-brainer. What made you want to become a voice actor slash performer?
I wanted to be a voice actor and performer as early as I can remember. Ever since I was a little kid, I was always interested in acting, and I was always, putting on plays or shows or doing things for my family and friends. And a lot of the time, that would be in the family living room, is where all that stuff would happen. And I was very fortunate because, my mom and dad were really good about getting home movies made of me and my twin brother Eric, and all the stuff that we would do as kids, get it on film and get it. And so it was just fun to not only act for them, but act in front of the camera. And it always felt like a, when they would pull the camera out, you knew something fun was going to happen. And it charged me up to want to perform. And I don't know. Ever since I was a kid, I was attracted to acting and performing, and whether that was, friends and family. A lot of the time, it was in the living room is where all that happened. And there are so many home movies. I mean, I have the home movies to prove it, because our parents were so good about taking video of me and my brother and our sister and just. There's a huge record of all this stuff that we did as kids, and it's a lot of fun to look back on, the genesis of me as a young performer, because that's where it started as a kid. And I think two of the biggest elements in, inspiring me to want to go down this path were two movies. One, The Wizard of Oz, the 1939 classic with Judy Garland, and the 1992 animated Disney feature Aladdin. Those two movies share a lot of similarities, but they're different in their own ways and unique and special in their own ways. But they came at a time, when I was growing up, The Wizard of Oz had its I believe it was its God 75th I think it was anniversary, and they re-released the VHS. And so I was getting exposed to it then, as a young kid, and it was speaking to all those parts of me that wanted to perform and loved fantasy and magic and songs and crazy characters and especially villains. And that movie had a really, really good villain. Hello, Margaret Hamilton, Wicked Witch of the West. So I think The Wizard of Oz is the thing that inspired me to want to act, because it was such a, it just seemed like such a fun idea to transform into something else, someone else, live out these larger than life scenes. And that's all that happens in The Wizard of Oz. I mean, it's tornadoes and, you know, the yellow brick road and flying witches and flying monkeys. And gosh, it's just that whole movie is magical. So if The Wizard of Oz is credited with being the first, you know, vehicle to get me to want to act, where Aladdin comes in is it was the first project that made me want to get into the voiceover side of things. It was just great. The marriage of the character designs and the songs and the color and the saturation and it felt like, for me, it felt like story time come to life, you know? You know how like when you're in elementary school and you have story time, you know, all the kids sit down and around the teacher and, you know, she reads a book and you're kind of picturing this stuff in your head, you know, as she reads it or as she or he reads it, and you're making it up in your mind, but watching it actually happen, that's what it felt like with Aladdin. It was like this story, this, you know, fable, 1001 Arabian Nights comes to life, and it's so vivid and it's funny. And it also had a great villain, Jafar, that really stuck out to me. So the villains always stuck out to me. So The Wizard of Oz, Wicked Witch, Aladdin, Jafar stuck out. So those two movies, that combination of larger than life, fantasy, music, songs, strong characters, humor, emotion, I just, you know, I soaked all that up like a sponge, as they say. I soaked it all up and it just really spoke to me, and it's something that's never left. I love those movies to this day. They will always be on my shelf. They will always be in my DVD or Blu-ray player. I can really say those two films are the catalysts for what got me down the path to wanting to be a performer. And ultimately voice actor, predominantly. So I owe so much to those movies, because I kind of wonder, would I be doing this if I hadn't seen them? You know, but both my brother and I were exposed to so much good quality entertainment in the late 80s and the early 90s. We got to see a lot of great stuff, because there was a lot of stuff was being done by the Jim Henson Company and with puppets, and all kinds of stuff was happening with stop motion and puppets and animation, and 2D and 3D was just beginning to, you know, was a burgeoning thing at that point. So it was just growing up in that period, late 80s, early 90s, was the perfect zone to breed the kind of creativity that exists within me and my brother. And, you know, we share that bond, I think, that creative artistic bond, me and my brother. But I think it's a result of what we grew up watching, you know, and what we grew up experiencing. And we just sort of naturally gravitated to those artistic, creative, fun, whimsical kind of things. So I definitely credit The Wizard of Oz and Aladdin as being, you know, the two primary catalysts for me getting into this career path.
Did you have a favorite character voice you developed for Northern Star?
This question is a toughie, because I don't know if I can narrow it down to just one, but you know, I think I have two favorite character voices that I, you know, devised for Northern Star. I think it first starts with Steve, you know, the guy that owns the Steel Automotive, the car shop. But then Deacon comes in second place. I really like him a lot too. What I like about Steve, I love just how smooth, in my opinion, I tried to make him smooth, and he's the confident one, you know, really at the beginning out of the two of them, he's the more confident one. He's the rock that Deacon ends up leaning on a little bit, or actually quite a lot throughout the story. He's lived more, he came from a more traditional background without the abuse. So he, since he wasn't exposed to that, he's not as fragile in those ways, and he can be that sounding board for Deacon when he needs to vent, you know. But he needs to sound that way. He needs to sound like he's more mature and, you know, older, wiser. But I like that smoothness that I think came across. I like that deeper tone. Obviously, Steve has a deeper tone than Deacon. I may have already said this, but like the confidence, I think, that comes through with Steve. Deacon even says at times that Steve has a cockiness that he likes, you know, that he sort of puts on display. So it was fun to have those cocky moments with Steve where he was really pushing the, yeah, you know, I know I'm confident and I own this dealership and, you know, but he was never an ass. He was never an ass, you know, he was cool and confident and very, very hot. Deacon, I also liked because I think a lot of qualities, I hope, came through for him. It's going to sound weird. I'm not using the right words, but, you know, I feel like he is sort of damaged as a person, and I think that comes through in the voice. Sometimes he's unsure of himself, so there's that wavering quality to the voice. There's sort of that lack of confidence and surety. I like that he does sound younger. He is younger. He's got a little bit of an edge to him that I like, I think. And he can kind of be an asshole, you know, being younger and being, you know, and having to put up with what he had as a kid. He isn't going to be the most proper person. You know what I mean? He's just going to be him. He's the result of his own experiences. And but I will say, with all he had to put up with growing up, I just love the sweet moments that Deacon has and that Ethan put into the writing, because he can be a real sweetheart. You know, there are those times where his real emotion, and Steve helps bring that out in him. You know, they help bring out the best in each other, which is really the core of what this book's about, I think. These two people, they were just like ships passing in the night. You know, in any other circumstance, they would have just passed right by each other, you know, and we wouldn't have even had the story, but that's not what happened. Something about each, you know, they caught each other's eye, and the rest is history. And they do work to bring out the best in each other, and it's not easy, but they have that spark that initially ties them together, brings them together. And then those shared personal experiences, as Steve gets to know more about Deacon and his life and his upbringing, and vice versa. Deacon learning about the hardships of Steve's first, you know, his marriage and having a child and coming to the realization that he's gay later, or having to admit to it later in life, and the repercussions of that and his personal story. It just brings both of them closer. So they really get on that journey together. And once they're on the journey, there really is no turning back for them. They stick it out with each other through thick and thin. So I just love that about the story. But yeah, those are the two voices that I really, really like. And I loved every time, you know, I switched it up for them and I got to be Deacon or I got to be Steve. It was fun to switch hats, you know. But those are the two characters I really, really liked.
There is a veritable cornucopia of different types of work that fall under the voiceover actor umbrella. Is there one in particular that you enjoy more than the others?
That is correct. There is a huge umbrella of, you know, voiceover categories to work in these days. Animation, narration, audiobooks, radio spots, video games, all kinds of things. So as Ethan says, there is a cornucopia. There's so many different things you can sink your teeth into as a performer and as a voice actor. And also, now more than ever before, there are so many opportunities and platforms in which to do that work. You know, you have the traditional mediums like film and television, online, web stuff. But really, the the proliferation of streaming media and you know, startup networks, which really aren't startups anymore, but at the time they were, like Amazon Studios, Amazon Originals, and Hulu and YouTube. They've amassed a grip on the industry, and they're really, really huge key players, but they have provided so many additional avenues for this work, for voice work, whether it's animation or books or whatever. So that's exciting. Of course, as performers, we all want more opportunities to do our craft and get paid for it. But also, it's wonderful for audiences and listeners, because they get, you know, we do this not only because it's a job, we do it because we're passionate about it, and we want the listeners to really enjoy what they're hearing or viewing or watching. And so there's so many places they can turn as audience members. excuse me, whether it's their iPad or their iPhone or their computer or their TV or their Apple TV, you know. So I love the variety of the types of work that are available for us to sink our teeth into. It's really nice to be able to have so many options. Do I have one that I favor more than the other? Not really. I mean, it really is the one that I'm doing at the moment. So if that's an audiobook, I'm jazzed about doing that audiobook and excited about doing that audiobook. If it's animation and it's an animated character, then I am really excited about doing that animated character and being more whimsical and kind of wacky. But I would say those are my two favorites. I think it would be animation. It's what really first inspired me in the field of voiceover. As I said, Aladdin stays with me, and it's a cornerstone. It's a hallmark of how I got to even be here doing what I do now. That's pretty neat when something from over 20 years ago can inspire you, you know, as a young kid, to the point that it's still with you as an, you know, you saw it when you were 8 and here you are 33 now. It's pretty cool when something or someone can inspire you to that degree where it helps you carve a career path or helps you discover and define what your own skills and strengths are. I think that's my favorite thing in the world, is wherever that can happen, I want it to happen. Not just for me, but for everybody else. I want everyone else. It's my wish. I want everyone to find their skills and their strengths, and what do they feel good at, and where do they think they shine, and how can they help, and where do they fit in the community and the context of the world and maybe an industry or whatever. But anyway, that's me going off on a tangent. But my favorite is animation, because I get to be larger than life and do things that I would never be able to do on camera or even in audiobooks, where the tone is often, you know, much more conversational. Yes, there are differences with the characters, but you're not 99% of the time you're not going to be playing, you know, an alien or a wacky character or, you know, an evil comic villain or anything like that, or I don't know, just audiobooks are fairly grounded. That doesn't mean they're not interesting. On the contrary, I do this because there's so much to sink your teeth into, particularly when there's really good writing like what Ethan does, that just makes me want to perform it and makes me want you guys to hear it, you know, and hope that you enjoy it and feel like it's a, you know, a 3D experience. You know, it's not just listening to a book. It's not just a narration, but it's a performance, you know. But generally, audiobooks are more conversational, and my preference is to kind of be larger than life. So that's why I prefer animation, but audiobook work comes in strong, strong second, and I love this work. Every opportunity I have to do a book or work with a publisher or author, I relish, and I try to, I give everything my all, but my goal is always to try to deliver the best possible product I can, which for me means believability, engaging performances, a nice tone, because we've got to, you know, you guys have got to listen to this stuff and it needs to have a pleasant tone throughout, but engaging, exciting, emotional, believable performances is what I always strive for, no matter what it is, actually, no matter if that goes for audiobooks or animation. Because even if we're being really, really wacky in animation, or we're being really serious in animation, whether it's a happy or sad thing, we need to still be believable.